Come and reminisce with us. This is 90s Till Infinity.
It's Gav here from the guy who brought you BRL. 90s Till Infinity walks you down the road of the best decade ever, the 90s. Catch 90s Till Infinity on Mixcloud or a radio station near you, or find us at 90s Till Show on Facebook and Instagram.
Coastal Feel. 90s Till Infinity.
Keeping it retro.
Reminisce with us.
Blood
stains
the ground.
BRL, son.
Peace, this is Nelson Dialect. You're tuned in to Beats, Rhymes and Life.
This is ISB. You're listening to BRL.
Yo, this is Rage. You're listening to BRL.
What up, it's 360.
Yeah, this is Nick Loopy from One Day Spit Syndicate.
I'm Seth Century. You're on Beats, Rhymes and Life, and I endorse this product.
Peace, family. This is El Fresh the Lion on Beats, Rhymes and Life. Stay tuned. This is where hip-hop lives.
It is Beats, Rhymes and Life, and due to a couple of bits of computer audio nonsense and the laptop's finally just dying. The laptop that we were recording on for the first two attempts for this is about 4.5 years old. It's been to the Pilbara back a bunch of times. It's recorded all of the initial era BRL stuff. So, you know, look, I think it might be time to retire that one. I think she might be done. But joining us on the Zoom, we have 7-6 and Eloquor to talk about their upcoming record, new single, and a whole lot more. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Well, I say back now to the pair of you because this is the third time we've had a crack at doing this, but hello.
Hey, Gav, how you doing? Thank you very much for having us.
Oh, my God, computer issues. Very, very annoying. But we have a brand new record from you guys coming out very, very soon. New single, time of this airing, of course, will be out there. It's called Fun and Games. I've had an advanced listen to it for a couple of weeks. I've enjoyed it. Of course, the video, by the way, is out there. So if you've seen the video, you've heard the song. But you guys got a brand new project coming up, a whole record stemming from Fun and Games and the films and all that kind of thing. So, explain the concept of this flowering project.
Can I quickly?
Go for it.
All right. So 7-6 and I have been working together for about 16 years. 7 had a studio called Stronghorn Studio in Oakley. Most of Melbourne, a lot of Melbourne MCs would go through there to record. Mm-hmm. And 7 helped me record my first proper EP there. And then, then from there, he's been supporting me with all of my albums, actually. Maybe about 5-6 years ago, we had a bit of a falling out and didn't talk for nearly 3 years, was shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, over dumb shit, just dumb shit, which I talk about on one of the tracks on the album in more depth. We had a stupid falling out and just too proud. And then we reconnected about three years ago. And 7 had built this crazy new studio and then we just got to work and then it was like, oh, let's do an EP. And then as soon as 7 said, let's do an EP, I'm like, oh, my God, you know that's going to be an album. He's like, come on, man. And I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. I know you. So
one album later.
Yeah, so that's it. So,
we met through music. And we'd been making music. We'd become friends throughout the time, throughout the years of making music together. But we never officially made anything that stated, you know, our working relationship. Usually Eloquor's project, so he's helming it, and I'm just supplying beats or whatever and helping out in whatever way I can. So, yeah, this is the first time we're actually, like, stating, yep, we're working together. This is the two of us. I'm usually happy in the background anyway, and that's part of that reason is, you know, I'm happy to supply the beats and the soundscape and you do the thing. But I think with this one, I think we share the ideas with a lot of them. We'll discuss the concept and, you know, like the how it's going to look, how it's going to appear, the marketing, that sort of thing. Like, it's all 50-50. So yeah, that's probably the difference with this, but we've known each other for a long time.
Right. Because when your name sort of came up producer wise, it's a name that I hadn't actually recognized personally at all. So you've been around for a minute, and obviously you've just been quietly that guy for a little bit. So you're like, I don't know, to do the Perth comparison, sounds like you're kind of Shakedown Studios, but for Melbourne. Like everyone's been through there, recorded, and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess to a degree, a lot of people, there were a lot of artists' careers that were started at Stronghorn. And a lot of, you know, those artists are now flourishing. I'll take no credit whatsoever. As I've stated before, I was just happy to see those moments in time. But yeah, quite a few. Like, it was in the earlier days when it wasn't as easy to set up a recording space at home. You know, so I've always had a lot of equipment. And part of the other reason might be the fact that I'm from the UK, so my career didn't stem here. And then during the time that I was running the studio, I was happy to do that as work. Stay in the background. I would DJ for the other artists here and there at live shows. But I've never been trying to make it as an artist before. So, you know, I've run a recording label in the back past as well. So I've always been happy to, you know, to lay the grounds for other artists to do their thing.
But even like Briggs recorded his first EP, Homemade Bombs, at Seven Studio, and that's where I met Briggs.
Oh, wow.
And that's where I met Briggs, and I asked him if he'd jump on one of the tracks with us, and so we've got a track. I've got a track on the Move Up album that Seven's on the beat, Briggs is on it, called Ain't No Place. And that's what, the 15-year-old song now, 15-year-old track. And then from there, when Briggs went on the State of the Art Hilltop Hoods tour, Seven was his DJ and I was his hype man. So we got to tour around with the Hoods and with Briggs, and it was great fun. So, yeah.
This is all, because we're very isolated over here in Perth. So, you know, I learned about those missing years of my Australian hip hop hood. Like, I just took essentially 10 years off of doing this show between 04 and 14. Yep. 10 years later now, still doing this show again. But yeah, it's, and I sort of filled in those gaps, that scene. But yeah, there's so many scenes, and of course, like, you know, so many stories within Australian hip hop that I haven't covered. And that is literally one of them right there. So I'm like, oh, wow, cool. So there's a rich history there from every scene across this entire country, and there's just a lot of stories out there, and I keep on hearing more and more. It's good. Maybe one of these days I should do a documentary.
We're definitely at that stage where I think we're starting to realize, I know I have, is that, you know, and there's a few other people around me that have realized that we should have been documenting our movements a lot better than we have, because now we're this far down the road, we don't have that much longer left. So I think that's part of what we're attempting to do with this release as well, is to document some of the truths of our past and, you know, the path going forward as well. So it's a very honest album. Like, we discuss things that have happened and occurred and was occurring during the time of the making of the album. And hopefully we're sort of laying a path going forward as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. And the way that... Yep.
No, no, go keep going. No, you go.
And the way that... I was just going to talk about the way that the album sort of came about. So someone the other day at work was asking me about, how did you guys work on the beats? Like, you know, do you sit there and Seven starts making a beat and then you kind of do it like that? Or does he have, like, you know, 50 beats he gives you to listen to and you choose one, or how do you guys do it? So basically, like, I'll rock over and Seven will have, you know, 2, 3, 4 newies, and then he'll play them. And then and I'll be like, can I write to that? Yep, go for it. And just send it to me. I'm back a week later and we get into it. We start, we record. So his beats are fantastic. Not enough people know 7-6 and what he's, you know, his production. It's fantastic and it has been for a long time. So, yeah, we need to get it out there and I want more people to hear how great his production is. So, yeah, and hopefully this album it will really showcase that.
Unsung hero of the Melbourne hip-hop scene.
I wouldn't quite say that much.
I would. I'd say that.
I wouldn't say that much. And that's probably one of my issues as well. I'm not one to boast. I'm not one to take credit. As I've stated before, and as I continue to state, I'm just happy to see growth, to see that we're still here, and to have witnessed some of the early budding periods of artists' careers, and to say that I was there to witness that. But obviously, there comes a time where I would like to be acknowledged that I was here. If not that, that's all. I'm not saying I need accolades or anything huge, but yeah, I was there. I need others to acknowledge that. So, and I know that takes work on my part as well.
Well, it's like I was showing Seven your page just before, your Instagram, and up came, you did a highlight of one of Illy's first albums. You did like
Yes.
And Seven's like, oh, I recorded that. I'm like, you recorded that? Yeah, I recorded the whole thing.
So this information would have been good about 2 weeks ago when I, you know, did the segment for the Long Story Short album. Yeah,
if you have a look on the artwork for that, my label. This logo is actually on the artwork.
Oh, wow.
Ellie, you know, he thanks me and shouts me out and all that good stuff on there as well. So, yeah, you know, he has given me that credit. So thank you for that. But yeah.
It's in there somewhere, by the way, that artwork.
I didn't even realize until I saw that it was 2009. I'm like, wow. And it was a few years before that Stronghorn was operating. So yeah, I've seen a lot of people, like quite a spectrum, like in that place I've recorded. Weirdly enough, Shannon Knoll.
Oh wow.
TQ,
TQ. Are you talking about the guy who did West Side?
Yeah,
TQ.
Yep. But Shannon Knoll was one of my favorite examples for the fact that, you know, he's seen a lot of the industry. He's been very he's well versed, you know, and he has a place to walk in.
20 years now for that guy.
This was, you know, earlier days as well. Mm. He had a place to come into the door with an ego, but didn't, you know. And he was listening to my opinions and like, what do you think I should do here? Do you think this harmony sounds good here? And I'm like, you don't even know, you never heard of me before. But the respect that he gave to me spoke so much about the sorts of relationships that I have with other artists. Ellicor would know. I'm very honest in the studio, so that was good coming back to this album as well, like and back to this friendship. Like we'd already laid a lot of ground between us in the working environment in the studio, and like how honest I'm going to be, and how honest I would expect Ellicor to be. So I think I had to push him in that regard, and he knew to expect that and took it on the chin a few times, because it can be hard to take when you're putting your heart and soul on a song, and someone's like, nah.
That's the thing.
It happened a few times.
I honestly wish there was probably a lot more records that maybe received a little of that feedback just quietly. You know, you get some homemade projects and they might sort of stress about it, but sometimes you do need someone with an ear and an honest opinion to go, that's not it.
Definitely. Because I've been in the room where, you know, people come in with all their boys, and everyone's like, oh, that's sick, first take. And I'm like, I can see all the faults and fractures, and I'm like, not to break you down, but I just know that you can do that better. Like, let's at least try doing it better. And that usually pushes them to do a better performance. Whereas, yeah, I know in a lot of rooms around the world over the years, people are taking that first, you know, that going off that gas from their boys and going with that first take where they could have done something that resonated with a lot more people. But I'm fussy in that way, and I'm willing to admit that I could be wrong as well.
Yeah, but I'm always nervous, even after all these years, when I've written a new track and Seven hits a record button and he goes, all right, go for it. And I'm always like, oh, what's he going to think? and until it's only until the end when you look at him and he either goes, or he goes, all right. So that's all you get out of him. But I'm like, as soon as I hear all right, I'm like, oh, my God, good, thank you. But there were a few I don't know, man. So we did not every track made the cut, that's for sure. And
but there was one in particular. Like, there's a couple of instances of rewriting, and in my opinion, necessary. In the vein of what we're talking about in being honesty and telling our truth. Yeah, there was a couple of instances of it could be anybody's story. Which is all well and good, and that's how, you know, you get artists, get fans to resonate with your music, but I want them to resonate to our story. I want them to get to know us. Those are the sorts of artists I personally resonate with. Like, I bring up this name all the time, but like Little Brother, you know, they're very hip-hop to me, but they're not trying to be your baddest rapper. Like, almost every song they're putting there... They're putting their truth on the track, but you get to know them that little bit more every time. Like, you almost feel like, I know those guys. I could walk up to them in the street and say, how's your family? are things going better now? Like, you know, we're at the age now where I think, for me personally, all that bravado is gone. All that's dead. Like, I'm not trying to prove myself to anyone. Like, I'm not hard. I'm not, you know, obviously... But as far as on music, you know, when we're making music, let's just make some real music that we can be honest and share to the world, and you know, that's our art, and with that, hopefully, that people will relate and resonate with that.
And the first single is actually a good example of that, because like Seven, he doesn't own his sample; he can play most instruments anyway, so he played the keys on that. That first single
violin in the background.
Yep, that's all me playing.
There you go. I was like, can he play that? And I'm like, well, if he can, then it's
I can play the violin, but not to that degree. So I'm playing, that's a synthesized violin, but it's me on the keys playing those chords.
I think you can see the violin in the background.
Yeah, that's why I'm looking at it. It's like, that one right there. I will
tell you, those violins are my wife's. I'm not allowed to touch them because, for reasons that I don't want to discourage anyone from being able to express themselves. And for that reason, I'm not allowed.
So she's nuts.
Violin was actually one of the first instruments I learned when I was a young boy in primary school, and I've continued to add instruments to my you know
repertoire,
yeah, tool list. But anyway, fun and games.
Oh yeah, fun and games.
Yeah,
so,
sorry.
That's cool. So yeah, Seven played on that, and I loved that beat. As soon as I heard it, I was like, oh wow, this is cool. It reminded me of a sad clown at a circus. That was the first thing I thought, a sad clown at a circus. Like, you know, sitting there by himself, you know, having a drink or a ciggy, and just the crowd is left and there's a mess everywhere and there's a few dim lights and his makeup's running and he's sitting on the edge of the thing just having a smoke and having a drink, like, oh, and this is my life. That's the imagery that it gave me. And then from that, I wrote Fun and Games, which is, I guess, about, you know, somewhat about substance abuse, somewhat about, you know, chasing your ego, and then also about trying to be humble. And that's just the fun and games of life. You've heard the track?
I have heard the track, yes. Yeah, I listened to it when I for an interview, and also listened to it when I was putting together the rest of the show. So, that's yes.
The elements, the strings, cool.
Yes.
Goodness sake. So.
But yes, no, that's kind of what I gathered from as well. That being said, I'm not good at absorbing lyrics like for the first two or three listens of a song. It just doesn't get through to here, ever. I don't know why. It's music that hits me well before anything else.
Yeah.
With anything. And for like someone who's listened to as much
I'm that guy.
I have. Yeah, just.
I'm very much that guy.
Yeah. But lyrics do not hit here for a while.
Your artist could be the best artist on the earth, but if they're not on the right beat, I could overlook them, because that's me. I'm listening to the production first, and like, that beat's nice.
Is that what you do, Gav, as well? You listen to the beat more? Or?
Yeah, I'm more of a music guy first up, and I think that's probably from listening for radio. So yeah, outside of this show and whatever. I was a professional radio presenter for a little while myself. So, and I was a music director as well for regional stations and some community stations. I still do it for Tune One now. But I have an ear for like the production and the sound, and I know what I like and I wouldn't know what I don't like, and I don't know how to describe that for you. But I think I've got a pretty good ear for at least putting together playlists for broadcast, that thing, you know. So that's how my ear works, and probably has worked since 1992 when turning on PMFM in Perth, Western Australia, and taping stuff off the radio back in the day. That's just the way my ear works. I could not tell you lyrics to most songs, not at all. Like maybe stuff I've listened to over and over and over and over again, like, you know, old clandestine records and stuff like that. It's some memorable.
And the older you get, you'll find the harder it gets as well. Like I think back often to the days when I could play an album and I would know every lyric from beginning to end. Obviously, we consume more as we get older, and with the advent of digital streaming and so on, you listen to albums less holistically than you used to, but still, even the odd song, wait till the chorus comes in, you'll see me get loud. But throughout the verses, I'm still like, yeah, I'm not picking it up like I used to.
No, but and I think you're dead on with the streaming thing, because you would sit there and absorb an album. If you really like the album, you're just going to sit there and absorb it over the course of weeks through car drives or in your old Walkman or Discman or whatever it was back then. And now it's just like, yeah, all right, cool. I've got like a playlist here, and we'll skip through that. Like at work, I literally listen to a couple of the BRL playlists, which are like a day long, literally 24 hours worth of Australian hip hop tunes, and they'll just have stuff in the background. And yeah, it's so much to absorb now that you really just kind of tune it out. It's like, oh yeah, I remember this. And that's pretty much how it goes.
Yeah. We have tried to cater to people like myself though, or like we are in the making of this album, like by putting it on vinyl. And by the curation of the songs as well, like some of the songs bleed directly into one another, so it sounds like one long song. They're pitch matched in so those are the sorts of albums that I've always loved, where you're not quite sure where in the album that you are, like you're not listening to genres switching from one song to another. We're not trying to please everyone. And that comes with age as well, I guess. but yeah, hopefully people will listen to it holistically and enjoy it for that experience as well, because it is a bit of a journey.
No, I think that's lost now as well, as people don't really make albums much anymore. It's like a series of tracks, mm-hmm. you know, 10 to 12 tracks, and it's like, yeah, this is an album, and you know, there might be some sort of thing or whatever they were writing at the time, but yeah, not a lot of records are like an album anymore. There's like, yeah. you know,
yeah.
there's not too much of that anymore, and it's a lost art. Well,
it's hard work. Like, it takes a lot of thought and consideration and planning, and you know, the right ear, like yourself. It takes someone like that can listen to songs and go on that journey and switch it up if it needs that. But yeah, I guess, you know, there's nothing wrong with the albums that are just a collection of tracks, but art of albums that were designed to be listened to from track one to till it ends is definitely getting lost. So yeah, hopefully we will continue to present more music that will take you on that journey. Hopefully we have or create an understanding with bands that we have or you know or join us that understand that
and inspire the young fellas as well, and the young new artists to do the same thing. Make an album, put it on vinyl.
It's fun.
yeah it's not lost. That's in the digital world.
Yeah, like I don't have enough vinyl. It's one of those very expensive habits that I probably would have liked to have got into. a little too late now with the children, and also how expensive everything is. But although that being said, I did literally buy off a guy in my neighborhood like a sealed pack of all the clandestine vinyls together for like $400. So I hope my missus never hears this podcast.
Our album is going to be anywhere near that expensive.
So
for those that aren't actually buying tangible vinyl, it's going to be available on digital as well. So you know, we're not making it so exclusive that anyone, you know, we ultimately we want people to listen to our music and enjoy it. So.
Yeah. And like the last time we chatted, Gav, with the Cerberus boys, I mean,
yes.
Jace Plyer and I put out an 18-track album and then a 6-track EP, but all digital. I got nothing to show for it. Like,
yeah.
I wish we had put it at least on a tape or a CD, because I don't have anything. It's like it's on Spotify and all that, and if Jace decides to just take it down, it's down, like you know. So it's.
I like a CD. I like a CD. That's a Delta album. It's just one that's I've got lying around, but there's something tangible to you a can physical hold. Copy. Yeah. Yes,
yeah.
It happened. It's
artwork. Real. Yes,
it's got artwork. It's real. You made it. It happened, but. You know,
and hopefully, you know, if everything was taken care of correctly back in the day, that artist actually got to made a connection with you. You know, your contribution was felt by that artist. Whereas with streaming, for those that know the business with the numbers of how many streams it takes to earn
it's
a dollar.
It's fractions of a cent on a play. Fractions.
Exactly. So I think that's one thing I've always loved as well is, you know, I've been in the business for many decades. Like, so, you know, seeing records getting pressed up and appreciating the art of that and seeing labels send out records and being able to count the sales against, you know, and the artist being able to say, there's however many people in the world that have bought my album. I don't expect that to happen, but you know, it's something that you could actually equate and judge your popularity on to a certain degree, which is getting lost as well. Radio yes. play.
These are also subjects that kind of fascinate me in a way, you know, sort of getting to know artists over the like last 20 something years of this show and other programs, and just like, and yeah, this is like a major discussion now, and I miss hard copy. Like this mm-hmm. I got this secondhand, and maybe there's some other stuff in my collection I might have, would have got through radio, but there's also a lot of stuff in there that I went into a 78s or a Dada's in Perth, Western Australia, or there's probably a few records in there I would have bought at Obese Records or the This Is It in Richmond or something like that. You know, those old stores, long gone now, but you go in there and you find your Australian hip-hop thing and, oh, look, Delta's got a new record. Oh, sweet, it's $15. I have $15. I'm going to buy this now. Elocore and 7-6 got a brand new record. This is my go throw this on top as well. You go to the counter and you look the guy in the eye and put some cash over the counter and you go home and listen to it. And there's something to that.
There was. And I think additional to that, because, you know, almost every record, like a friend of mine, Scotty Hines, but like has been involved in many projects over the years, but had a couple of vinyl releases recently,
mm-hmm.
and came around to listen to it. And we were listening to this record for however long it was playing and just staring at the artwork for the whole time, like not needing to say anything. We're just like studying the vinyl, looking at the credits, appreciating the effort that was put into it. And it took me back to, you know, all the years of listening to music and looking at the credits and, you know, getting a connection with the other people that were involved in the creation of this work of art, which doesn't happen. That's also lost on digital now. Unless you're so inclined to go into the credits and see, oh, who produced this? Who, you know, and if the artist has updated all those details, but otherwise,
true.
No one knows.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. It's a lost art. There are people holding on to it, and maybe it will sort of come back. And who knows? Who knows with that kind of stuff? You're just making me all nostalgic now. It's like, oh, I'm like, oh, listen to some records. But anyway. The album, when's that due?
It'll be June. It'll be in June. We don't have a solid day in June, but it'll be mm-hmm. June. And we're going to launch it in July at Revolver in Melbourne.
Oh, nice. Classic venue?
Yeah. I think I've launched 4 albums at Revolver. So this will be...
I was talking about this with Frankie yesterday, like your relationship with Revolver. I've performed at Revolver a number of times with Elocore as well.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of an affinity with that site.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
All good.
There's a bit of an affinity there.
I love Revolver. I love stinky old Revolver. It's my favorite. I remember going there as 18-year-old on those stinky couches.
There's nothing like a dirty old venue. I miss the Hyde Park Hotel. I miss the Hyde Park Hotel.
It's nice and central. A lot of people can get there. You know, like let's be real. Like we're beginning. Like as we've mentioned in the beginning, like we're new artists. Like although we've been in the game for a long time, no one knows who 7-6 is. 7-6 and Elocore are a new entity.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping to get big numbers at the door, but we're going to try and make it as easy as possible by making the venue accessible, and you know, hopefully the price will be nice enough and the products will be appreciated by those two.
Solid supports, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. All that kind of thing. But the record will be called What Gentleman? And then we'll get into some fun and games.
It's called The Stronger the Wind, the Stronger the Tree.
Ooh.
So it's all about resilience, and the more hardship you have, obviously, the stronger you become. And that's, yeah, and that's reflected through a lot of the lyrics throughout the album. So, yeah, it was one of my lyrics in the album. And then I actually got it off an old poem. I found an old poem.
I think I'd cited it the other day. I can't remember the artist's name. But
yeah, it's just one of the lyrics in an old poem. And I'm like, oh, that's a sick lyric. So I just put it in one of my raps. It just sort of put it in there. And then Seven was like, what did you say? And I'm like, you know, the stronger the wind, the stronger the trees. And he's like, that could be a good title. So, yeah, so we went with it. And then my friend Andrew Boyle, who's a photographer, lives over in New York. He used to take a lot of the photos for Obese in the early Obese days. So Andrew Boyle got started on the artwork when he was here over December, January. Then he went back to New York, and then 7/6 then sort of worked from there, from Andrew's artwork. So it's a collaboration. And then to launch the album, we created this was Seven's idea, an 11-minute short film / double video clip, which is sort of not loosely but quite closely, but based on truth and my experience and our experience. So and then we released that in three parts. And the actual full video comes out on the 15th. So I think Gav, you got an unlisted early viewing
exclusive.
Yes. Yeah. So everyone, there are small benefits to being Gavin Crossley from Beats Rhymes Live. So small benefits. But gentlemen, my Zoom is running out of time, so we got to close this one up. But gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us on Beats, Rhymes, and Life.
Thanks, Gab.
Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Peace.
Dropping EDM, hip-hop, and a bunch of best beats programs around. If you want bangers, you'll be in the right place with Tune 1. Tune1.com.au. That's Tune, the number one, .com.au. Tune 1, proud show sponsor.